On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, Mike Mayock sounds almost too perfect as he's doing the media blitz this week. We'll talk about that. We'll evaluate some rookies. We'll talk about Jason Witten's greatest accomplishment, and the Las Vegas Review-Journal's Heidi Fang joins us for a great conversation as well. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD. Find your state of natural relaxation, and we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you are listening on. Please continue to do so. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto here. Playing injured, Mr. Soto. Still week two of COVID. Oh, yeah, now you got the sympathy coughs right there.
No.
I'm on to you. Trying to get me to feel sorry for you, Soto. It's not working.
No sympathy needed. Thank you very much. This is day 8, I think.
Okay.
Day 8, and it's just getting worse, man. It's, I thought the weekend was pretty bad. But I guess it's, luckily I have the body aches, and I don't have the chest, like, lung ache. Okay. Which is a lot worse from what I understand. I have a couple of nurse friends of mine who are like, well, normally you either feel it in your whole body or you feel it in your lungs. I was like, well, I don't have the lung thing. But the body aches, man. I feel like Lincoln Kennedy and Chester McLaughlin are standing on top of me. Like it's bad, man. It's bad. The body aches are no joke, but I'm giving it what I got today. Put me in, coach.
You're looking thick.
I've lost like 12 pounds, man. This is the best diet ever.
If you could just stay on COVID all the way till June, you could have a beach body just in time for summer, you know? You can get that second or third strain, you know, and just be, you have washboard abs by suntime.
Yeah. I just need to make sure I get the tattoos to cover up all the stretch marks.
Yeah. they got lasers for that.
Oh, lasers, do they?
Or beams. I don't know. Sponsor
to laser my whole entire body of these stretch marks.
You put whatever you want on there, give you a tan, give you just like super good chest hair. Possibilities are endless. This COVID thing's gonna be the best thing that ever happened to you, Soto. I'm telling you.
You know what? I'm trying to think positive.
Good man. So we're gonna talk to Heidi Fang, Las Vegas Review Journal here coming up in about, 20, 30 minutes or so. Whenever we're done talking about the stuff we want to talk about.
Finally, a lady to class up the joint.
I know, right? I feel kind of nervous. You know what I mean?
No, I don't want to say any fucking fart jokes or nothing. I don't want to say anything stupid because I always say something stupid.
So Heidi and I go way back. So we both worked at SiriusXM. We worked on the same show at SiriusXM 10 years ago. And then now our paths have crossed again. She works for the Las Vegas Review Journal, obviously still covering MMA and then covering the Raiders and other, you know, Vegas stuff that's going on. But I always feel the same way. It's like, oh man, we got a girl on here. We're gonna be on our best behavior. But girls that work in sports, like, they deal with jackasses like us all the time. Maybe not as jackassy as us, but along the same lines.
I mean, a lot more handsy than us. I mean, we're virtual. So
yeah,
I've heard a lot of those stories. So that's going to be better for her, I think. I would rather hear it than feel it any day.
No one's putting their hands anywhere near you, virus boy.
Yeah, for sure. Not right now.
But I want to start out with this. So GM Mike Mayock. I was excited when we hired him a couple seasons ago. I feel like he's, because John Gruden rules the Raiders with an iron fist, having a GM, no matter how good they are, isn't going to matter if Gruden doesn't respect him, if Gruden doesn't believe in him, if Gruden doesn't trust him to execute something, right? So you could have a black belt in scouting, but if John Gruden doesn't listen to you, your skills are worthless. So it doesn't matter. So luckily he picked up something that I think knows what he's talking about, and two, someone that Gruden trusts. And so he's been doing the interviews all over the place. He spoke to The Athletic this week. He spoke to Las Vegas Review Journal this week. And he spoke to Raiders.com this week as well. So, first off, before we get to Mayock, what are you smiling at?
What is that?
You hear my kid pounding on the door on the outside?
I do.
That's little Frankie demanding to talk about Mike Mayock and complain about the Raiders.
She's very upset about Mike Mayock right now.
She is, and rightfully so. So what do you make of, before we get to what Mayock talked about this week, and he talked about everything, the defense, the rookies, how things were in COVID. He's down in Alabama right now.
Senior Bowl, right?
Senior Bowl and all that stuff. What do you make of Mike Mayock so far in his tenure with the Raiders?
You know, it's hard to say. It's hard to say what level of influence he actually has. Mm. You know, there's been talk about him being the mid late round guy and the kind of fill in the gaps guy. Whereas, you know, Gruden falls in love with these guys at the top of the draft and stuff like that, which is they've been the head scratchers. The top of the draft has been the head scratchers, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's hard. It's almost like getting a true evaluation of Derek Carr. Like, you don't know how much control he has. And like you said, Gruden's that control freak, man. He's the epitome of control freak. And trust is huge with him because it almost seems like he just couldn't be bothered with anything else. He wants his offense and that's it. Just leave the offense to me. You take care of the defense. You take care of the scouting. You take care of the special teams. You take care of the free agents. You take care of this. Just leave it to my offense and that's it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, I really don't like it. I don't like what's happening because, again, if you're like the last say, it's a, you can definitely go in there and just fuck everything up. So, I mean, to answer your question, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what to say about Mayock because we're never going to hear the truth. Mayock's not the kind of guy who's going to, you know, shit down Gruden's neck and throw him under the bus and say, oh, well, you know, he undermined me everywhere. I mean, maybe fast forward 10 years, he might write a book or something, but we just don't know, man. It's a lot of these head scratching picks, like the Cleveland at four, the Arnett pick, like, oh man, like even the Abram pick was a head scratcher.
I don't know. It just feels like there's two different types of picks that the Raiders have done. And one definitely feels like Mayock and one definitely feels like Gruden, like the Gruden grinders, right? Clelin Ferrell at fourth overall. And, you know, Jonathan Abram, he's just like, oh, he's a hard-nosed guy, even though he just doesn't know how to cover. Like, those just feel like John Gruden. Whereas the Mayock ones, like Max Crosby kind of feels like Mayock. Like those mid-round guys that, you know, maybe slip through the fingers of, you know, of some other teams and some other scouts. He seems, you know, kind of have his finger on the pulse of those guys and is able to figure them out. So I don't have like a source or like data to like prove this. Just personality wise, certain dudes feel like Mayock, like the mid round guys that overperform, and then the reaches, and then just the guys that like look like they're like scratch and sniff from a John Gruden comic book. Like, oh yeah, that's a Gruden grinder. That just smells like a Gruden guy.
Can we get like some of this flashiness on the defense, please? Like, why do we have to have all the flashiness on the offense? What can we have a little bit on the defense?
Well, the only good thing, like the silver lining of the Raiders having such a terrible defense last season, is that maybe this will finally wake Gruden up, right? 2/3 of the salary cap was spent on the offense. And that's because it's Gruden's baby. He has an expensive line. He has a franchise quarterback and, you know, the most expensive backup quarterback ever, a third string tight end that's getting $4 million. Like, these are all like, you know, Gruden just gets money happy. And just like, he can't help himself. But because the defense was so bad, not just last season, but the last, you know, tenure of, you know, John Gruden's second tenure with the Raiders, maybe this will finally wake him up and say, okay, instead of giving myself like a third tight end or, you know, the next most expensive tackle that's open in free agency, let's get a good free safety. Let's get some edge rushers. Let's spend some draft capital on the defense that definitely needs it.
For sure, man. It's just, but who's to say? Who's to say? He's going to do whatever the fuck he wants to do. He went to the Buccaneers and he had it made. He had a fucking ready-made team. He went in there. He just didn't fuck it up. And then every year after that, he, guess what? He fucked it up a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Who's to say he's fucking, he's learned his lesson. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it, because the mistake he made, not only with hiring Paul Gunther in the first place, but bringing him back for that third year, bringing him back that last year, that mistake right there, that's not a second time around head coaching mistake that you make. That's not your third stop. I mean, we're going to call it the third stop because it's the third team he's coached, but that's not a third stop mistake that you make. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a rookie coach who maybe the defensive coordinator is, you know, he's got a little bit more experience than him and he doesn't want to fire him and this and that, or whatever. He got snowed by some bullshit. That's not a mistake that a John Gruden makes. That someone who was held up to a John Gruden standard, you don't make that kind of fucking mistake. Number one. Number two, you spend that little on this young of a defense. You have this young of a defense and you pretty much spend nothing.
Yeah.
Hardly anything. And you don't fill what you need. It's who's evaluating these players, or and if they are you not listening to them? And it's like, when is it going to change? I don't know, but it doesn't seem like he's learning.
Well, look, I mean, they spent on defense, right? I mean, they a couple linebackers, a couple edge rushers, like, you know, they spent the last two seasons. They just whiffed terribly. That's the problem. And so that's why I think what, you know, listening to Mike Mayock is going to be big this offseason, because as much as Gruden obviously rules the Raiders with an iron fist, I think Mayock has his ear. And now maybe because the defense has been so terrible, maybe he'll listen a little bit more. Hopefully this will be a look in the mirror time for John Gruden, because listening to Mike Mayock, he definitely sounds like he's looked himself in the mirror a little bit. Now, I got five pieces of audio that I'm going to share with you. Some of them are general. Some of them are very specific. He sounds very unhappy and hasn't minced words, specifically about the defense. He took a lot of responsibility, but he also blamed a lot of things the same way Gruden does. Injuries and COVID. Blamed a lot of things on injuries and COVID, while at the same time saying, I don't want to make excuses, and then go and make excuses. But then he also pointed the finger at himself as well. He says a lot of the right things, and that's what you would expect from a guy with as much TV experience as Mike Mayock does.
He's a pro.
he also generally walks the walk that he talks. So
let's see if we can catch those little intricacies, because he'll give you something. You gotta be able to know how to get it.
So let's read in between the lines, over the lines, under the lines, through the lines, at the lines. Let's do all of it. So this is from YouTube. This is from the Raiders production company. You know, they get all the big interviews in the Raiders, so they got Mike Mayock. Here's him. He was asked to describe the 2020 season.
No excuses. I would characterize it as frustrating and disappointing. You know, we were 6-3, and we controlled our own playoff lives, and we didn't take care of business. So the year before we were 6-4, you know, so, I think the difference this year, if I had to say, where did you make a jump? You know, we beat some really good football teams this year. We beat Kansas City. We beat Cleveland. We beat New Orleans, but the problem is we didn't do it consistently enough, especially at the end of the season. So, did we get a little bit better? Yeah. I think we were a top 10 offense, any way you want to categorize that, including points per game, like what we did offensively, but we got to get way, way better on defense.
So this is exactly what you want to hear, but it almost sounds too perfect coming from Mayock, because obviously Raider Nation's unhappy with how we fell apart at the end of the season. Even though we went 8-8 and had a great offense, like, we completely fell apart after starting 6-3 for the second season in a row. So he's acknowledging that. He's saying we need to get better. He's telling us, yes, you are right, Raider Nation. We got to get our act together. I'm unhappy just like you are. But here's all the things we did well. So this was like the most perfect answer to kind of, you know, it's like getting caught cheating on your girl. You're like, hey, babe, this is my fault. You know, it'll never happen again. This is all me. But you gained a little weight and you've been hanging out with your friends a lot. And this is kind of what it felt like coming out of Mayock.
It's not a stretch to say that the defense played poorly. That's not
ding ding ding.
I don't think I don't think that he really said much of anything in that. well, yeah, we were 6-3 this year, and we were 6-4 last year, and we improved in some areas. He almost said it like he didn't even want to say it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we did improve in some areas, I guess. No matter how you shake it, we were a top 10 offense and everything. But, you know, we do got to get better on defense. And, yeah, you do. How are you going to get better? What are you going to address? What are some of the issues that you've seen?
I'm glad you asked that question, Juan Soto, because that was what he was asked next. How do you rebuild this defense?
I'm such a goddamn pro.
Look at you.
The way we look at it, or at least the way I look at it, is that last year we did not have a dynamic playmaker at any level.
Nope.
Okay, and that's hard when you go into a game every Sunday and they don't have to specifically game plan for any one player. Okay? When you take a step back, do you go, is there anybody in the building that could be a dynamic playmaker? And I think we have a few guys. You know, Max Crosby played through some injuries last year that a lot of people wouldn't. I think Cleveland Farrell is going to continue to develop.
So I think he's got a point here. He kind of sounds like he's echoing what Gus Bradley is going to do on defense as the new defensive coordinator. Is we need a dynamic pass rusher. We need somebody that's going to take the offense's attention so everyone else can flourish.
All right.
Okay. you don't sound impressed.
I'm not. I'm not overly impressed by anything yet. Because if that's
is he right though?
About what? About not having players? Yeah, I've been saying it since I don't know how long. We have no players on defense. Now, Littleton was supposed to be a player. You can say that he wasn't used properly, but he just flat didn't play well this year. Okay, yeah. We just don't have players. We don't have anyone that we need to identify. Okay, that's where he is. We don't have that guy, and I don't think. That Max, I think Max is what he is, man. He's a poor man's Jared Allen. He's what he is. He's a hard-nosed, high energy, high motor guy. Whenever you hear high energy, high motor guy, you think coverage sacks. Mm-hmm. You don't think twitchiness off the edge, beating tackles clean, you know, taking quarterbacks down before they can make their reads. That's not what you think of when you think a high motor, high engine guy. It's just not what you think of. It's just not the same thing. And that's what we need. We need quick, twitchy players. We need them players. That's what he said we needed. We don't have those playmakers. We don't have those players.
But I think when I read between the lines from him, I think what he's saying is like, look, if we can just get one player, just one player, he can make everyone else better. He's like, all right, we need one dynamic game changer on defense. Just like someone who can get the offense's attention and free up everybody else. I like that idea that because look, I've been saying it on this show for as long as the show's been around. The Raiders aren't going to do an overall like personnel sweep on the Raiders, on the defense. They're not. It's all first round picks and expensive free agents. It's just bad business for them to try to do that. So what they got to do is pray to God that it was a Paul Gunther problem. Gus Bradley's going to come in here and have everyone raise their level up a little bit. But then also just add two or three primary pieces and that should help make everyone better. So if they bring, you know, an all-pro edge rusher in, for instance, hopefully, and what I'm getting from out of Mike Mayock, and I think he's right, that'll open up Max Crosby. That'll open up Farrell. Like that'll open up everyone's game. That'll put pressure on the quarterback, which will make Damon Arnette and Jonathan Abram better in coverage because that quarterback's not going to have forever to throw the ball. So the glimmer of light and the hope that I think he's giving here, Soto, is if we can get just one or two massive difference makers on defense with a new scheme, with a new defensive coordinator, with a bunch of young players that hopefully, fingers crossed, play to God, are going to be 1 year better, we can see a pretty good jump for this defense.
Well, I agree, but I don't think any of those players are on the roster right now.
I'm with you. Yeah. I think he was just kind of, I put that in as a caveat that, oh yeah, it could be Max or Clay that can be that guy. I'm like,
it could be the fucking water boy, dude. It's not going to be anybody. There are no needle movers on defense, mm-hmm. on our defense right now. None. I'm sorry to say it. There are no needle movers unless they've just been playing like shit or hurt or some Gus Bradley just injects them with something crazy mm-hmm. next year. but I don't see there being a needle mover on this defense at all.
So he got into three specific players, two rookies and a guy that's basically a rookie, Henry Ruggs, Damon Arnette, Jonathan Abram, all first round draft picks. Here he is on our first round pick from this season, Henry Ruggs.
You know, Henry Ruggs, I think, is who he is. I'm not disappointed in Henry. I think Henry's got to get better, you know, and we knew how fast he is, but he's got to get stronger and he's got to get in and out of his breaks better. You got to feel him coming out of his breaks more for him to get to the next level. And I think he will, but we've got a long-term view on Henry Ruggs.
So I guess what he's saying is like they didn't expect him to be a massive difference maker his rookie year, which they would be right because he certainly wasn't. But he also echoed a lot of the things that I've brought up is he's got to be stronger. He's got to be a better route runner. The speed is there, but there's more to being a fantastic wide receiver in the NFL than just being able to be, you know, lightning fast with smoke coming out of your cleats. Like you got to do all those other little things. And Mayock is, you know, publicly challenging Ruggs to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Cub said it last week. He's got to get in the weight room. He's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. Mm-hmm. Every time he got tackled, I mean, I didn't really notice it. But, yeah, I did start feeling that way every time Ruggs got the ball. Like, just run out of bounds. Don't get tackled. Because he always came up limping. He had something with him. And I'm not calling him a bitch or anything like that whatsoever.
It sounds like you are.
No, I'm not. I'm not. Don't put that out there, RJ.
It sounds like, Soda, you're calling this professional athlete a bitch. I've heard you call someone a bitch before, and that's what it sounded like.
That's not what I'm saying whatsoever.
Okay, good.
What I'm saying is I'm echoing what Mike Mayock is saying, but he needs to get in the weight room, and he needs to get stronger. One thing that a lot of the rookies, a lot of the Arnettes and the Ruggs and some of these smaller guys that come into the league, they missed out on that lifting program, lifting with everyone else.
Yeah.
They were basically just doing their own shit. Who knows if they had access to a gym or weights or what the fuck they were doing. They were doing some Jane Fonda jazzercise bullshit. Who knows what the fuck they were doing to stay in shape?
Prison workouts in the alley?
Yeah, they weren't freaking – I could tell some of these motherfuckers weren't throwing the steel around. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I don't like taking Ruggs that high and like you said, not having great expectations for him. I think that's just saying, oh, we're just going to fuck this year up and, you know, see what happens. I think the Raiders could have gone in a lot of different directions that would have helped the team. Other than Ruggs, if they wanted to find some needle movers, they could have found maybe two or three. Hopefully their plan works out, because that's just a wasted pick, in my opinion. If you're just going to stash a guy for a year, basically.
Speaking of lifting and getting bigger, he spoke on the other first round pick, Damon Arnette.
Arnette was the other first rounder. In training camp prior to injury, he was playing really well. We were excited about Damon Arnette. He's instinctive, tough, and fast. But concussions, a broken hand, COVID, okay, you know. He's got to take care of business in the off season. Nutrition, strength coach, consistency of a day-to-day program.
Yeah.
Sounds like he just needs to be a professional.
Yeah, man. That's one of those things. There's a reason why LeBron spends so much money on his body and why he's playing.
And not just that hairline.
Oh no, that hairline. That was the biggest comeback in NBA history. That hairline. For sure. For sure. That hairline. He went and saw that one, that Empire guy for the carpet. That motherfucker, he got a whole two bedroom apartment done on his head.
Fuck like the winery and all like the side businesses he's doing. If he does like a Just for Men or something, like a hair club, he'll be a billionaire. He's just a walking billboard.
Fucking LeBron looked 48 when he was like 25. That fucking hairline was rough. But no, in all seriousness, he spends so much money on his body because he wants it to perform a certain way.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys, I mean, you know, we heard stories about some of these guys running through and eating McDonald's every single day. And they just, you know, naturally athletic, and their body can burn it because they're working out and this and that. And you know what? Doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'm going through COVID right now. I cannot even imagine going through this and then being cleared and then playing a football game. Yeah. Because I'm off as fuck right now. I'm still in the middle of it. I'm like day eight right now, I think it is. And it's, I can see where it could fuck you up for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
For sure. I haven't taken a full breath in. I don't know how long. I'm afraid to, because it hurts. But I don't know, man. We'll see. A part of that's taking care of your body too. You know, let's see what kind of program they can get together and put an off-season program together for these guys. Let's see if these guys spend a little bit of money on their career. You know, let's see. You know, I hate to be stereotypical, but let's see if they can maybe buy a couple less chains and a couple less cars and start putting some money into a nutritionist or into a personal trainer or to upgrade the facilities that they have at home and get some more things that they need to make themselves better athletes moving forward. Be, like you said, to be professionals. Because we, I mean, when we've trained together, we train at a jiu-jitsu MMA gym. We knew those guys. We knew those guys that were good fighters. They didn't take care of treat their body like shit. And they just were just guys. I mean, we knew these guys that they could be better than they were, but they weren't, because they weren't taking care of their bodies. And
that's what's most frustrating too. It's like Mike Mannick is talking about, like Damon Arnett's got all the skills in the world. He's right in between the years. His instincts are good. The quickness is good. But he's coming out publicly, and he said it in almost every single interview I've seen this week. I saw at least three interviews where he brought up Damon Arnett and other rookies need to focus on their bodies, nutrition, weight room, being professionals. I mean, this isn't a subtle, not an attack, but this isn't a subtle nudge by Mike.
It's not a subtle jab.
This is not at all. This is like,
and you know what? I'm glad. I like it. I like it, because there's no bullshit when time comes to put up or shut up and put the pen to paper. Hey, motherfucker, I told you this years ago.
Yeah.
What the fuck you been doing?
You didn't listen. One of the most controversial young players on the defense, he touched on as well.
John Abram, another first round pick. John gets out of control sometimes.
Sometimes,
I'll say.
Control.
Jesus.
Accentuate the positive and take away the negative. So there's some guys back there that we think can play, and there's some reasons their growth has been stunted, but they need to step up this year.
So, you know, and it sounds like a broken record with all the excuses that we're getting from Gruden and now from Mayock about COVID and injuries and youth, but you know, there's some truth to it, right? Like it is a truth, but it's a truth all, you know, other 31 NFL franchises are dealing with. And then you get down to Jonathan Abram, and it's simply like, all right, dude, just stop running around like your hair's on fire.
Yeah.
It's like, you fundamentally sound.
Yeah, just that's not his bag, dude. That's not his bag. I'm going to cut Abram a little bit of slack, because he is who he is as a player. And if you're asking him to be something different, that's a you problem. That's not an Abram problem. He is who he is. He is a downfield missile. That's what he is. He's the kind of guy that he'll bite on a freaking on a play action here and there, but more often than not, he's going to make that tackle, or he's going to affect that run near the line of scrimmage, if not behind the line of scrimmage.
And I'm glad you brought up that perspective of, you know, know who you're drafting and let them be themselves, as opposed to trying to, you know, put a square peg into a round hole.
And he said Gunther, that, man.
Yeah, that was Gunther.
Gunther issue.
But Mayock put some of the blame on himself. He told the Las Vegas Review-Journal, I think the guys that were trying to play different positions were really hamstrung. It was a hard enough year to come in at your own position, and I'm not complaining because the whole league was dealing with it. But if I had to smack myself over my head, that would have been my point. It's difficult to say you're going to draft Lynn Bowden in the third round and take a quarterback slot back and make him a running back. I think he's got the talent and skill set and all those things, but in a COVID year to learn protections and everything else, it's really a difficult task. And to a lesser degree, the same true of Amik Robertson, who was always an outside corner in college. So when you come into our defense and play nickel, it's a completely different world. So that's probably the best thing I heard. And we're going to get to Heidi Fang here in a second. That's probably the best thing I heard from Mike Mayock in all three interviews I read this week, saying we drafted guys trying to make them something they're not when they're young in a COVID year, when everyone's hurt and can't practice anyway. We need to stop doing that. That's probably the most like concrete thing I heard from Mayock this week.
Who is the calming influence on that defense? who is the guy who's made plays, who is a history of making plays, who's the calming influence? Hey guys, I know what coach is saying. I know this, but here's what we're going to do. Who is that guy?
I don't think there was one.
Yeah. I mean, Joyner was supposed to be that guy, but he makes more mistakes than everyone else.
Yeah.
So no one who can listen to his ass. I wouldn't. You're the one fucking blowing assignments left and right, dude. And I'm not saying that it's all his fault, because here when we're hearing about Gunther's defense, I don't know who wouldn't be fucking everyone looked confused.
Yeah.
But they don't have that guy. They don't have that guy on that defense. Eric Harris, maybe? Eric Harris, he's not terrible. I mean, we make fun of him, but he's not terrible. He's a free agent, and he's a guy that's going to get looked at. But man, that's what I don't see on this defense. I don't see that Rodney Hudson. I don't see that Jason Witten, even if he's a little older, just doesn't make the mistakes. A guy that, hey man, I've been around, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. We don't have that guy on defense. And that's something that needs to be said. Instead of fucking getting, God damn it, I'm gonna my blood pressure is gonna go through the roof right now.
Most exercise you've gotten since you got COVID.
I know, right? I can't even pop a decent B right now, dude. It's fucking terrible. Why the fuck are we signing a Jason Witten? It didn't make any sense. I was more upset with the Jason Witten signing than the Marcus Mariota signing. Because at least the Marcus Mariota signing made somewhat sense if you weren't sold on Carr.
Yeah.
I understood it. This, you know for a fact that Witten is never going to be a starting tight end again in the NFL.
And he's taking reps away from a really good backup tight end.
A guy that who scored 5 red zone touchdowns for you the year before. Mm-hmm. He's not a joke. He's not a punk. He knows what the fuck he's doing. He's not a liability anywhere on this offense. Moreau should have gotten more snaps. I don't understand the fucking hard on that Gruden has for this guy. If he ends up being a freaking coach, great. Carry that clipboard. Just don't throw him the fucking ball anymore.
Foster Moreau became a foster child this season, and it was unfortunate. Damn. All right, here she is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Heidi Feng. All right, joining us now, someone I've gone back with almost a decade now. We're getting old. Heidi Feng from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. We worked together at SiriusXM forever ago. She's now working in Las Vegas covering basically all the sports there, Raiders, of course, included. How you doing, Heidi?
I'm doing great. It's so good to be joining you and to see your face. I don't see faces in these pandemics.
Yeah, no one's ever said I'm happy to see your face, RJ. So this is the first time. You know, I've been told I have a face for I have a voice for radio and a face for newspapers, but in this Zoom era, I guess I got to come back. You know what I
think everybody's on a fair and even platform in the Zoom era. We all get to start to recreate ourselves here.
I just got to get one of those Kardashian like air filters. You know what I mean? So like the light just shines perfectly off my eyes. You know, I just look perfect.
Yeah. My filter's been COVID. It's thinned out my face. A little bit.
Oh no, did you get it, Juan?
I'm in it right now.
Oh, he's
Are
in it
really?
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Don't cough into the mic. We got to keep Heidi healthy.
No, yeah, for sure. No, that's just, I'm going to keep it all over here.
You had the best disposition about that than I've ever seen, man. I wish you the best getting through all of it.
I've slept probably, I think RJ texted me today at like 11. He's like, all right, 6 o'clock, be ready at 5:30. I'm like, I'm going to sleep till 5:15. And that's what I did. I slept till 5:15.
That's what you do on your healthy days. I don't know why you're making this out to be a big deal.
You know what? I try to stay on a routine. You know what I'm saying? Keep a solid routine. Sleep till 5:15. Get up. Kill a podcast. Kill a pizza.
And life of a king. Good man. Good man. So Heidi, just your overall thoughts on the Raiders 2020 season. Started out great, 6-3, fell apart late, just like last season. Offense played great. Defense played terrible. Some young guys played well. Most played terrible. Like what, when you think of the 2020 season, like what comes to mind first?
You're really, you know, summing it up in a nutshell there. But the first thing was, I got to start with the 6-3 start. I mean, they looked like a different 6-3 team than the previous year's 6-3 team, because it wasn't something that was unfamiliar when you go back to 2019 with, as far as the record went. And when you look down the stretch, oh man, the Falcons, the Jets, you know, you think, okay, these are winnable games. And then they have this nail biter against the Jets and you're going, what the heck fell apart? And then from there, it was just this downward spiral and they couldn't put the brakes on. And I think a lot of it had to do with the team trying to stay healthy and some of the defensive players, like you mentioned, Damon Arnett, just not really being ready for the NFL speed. I don't want to say he wasn't ready for the NFL level, but when you're injured and you're playing from behind, even though he still had that hand injury before, when you're coming in into the NFL, you want to be as healthy as you can be. And, you know, playing with a club on one hand, basically, I mean, it's great if you want to draw a personal foul, but it's terrible if you're trying to really dive in and tackle efficiently and use all of the weapons available to you. So I think there's a lot of growing that needs to be done, but to be fair to a lot of these rookies, they didn't have an off season. They had, you know, Zoom meetings, and you can't apply what you're learning in a Zoom meeting to the speed of an NFL game until you're in it. So I think a lot of them were learning on the fly, and then you switch defensive coordinators, and that wasn't really that big of a deal because there were three games, but you're still changing up things for a lot of these guys who are just getting on book for what they already had to learn. So now Gus Bradley, I think that's going to be a bright spot. Legion of Boom. To see what happens with it, the Raiders.
So you like the Gus Bradley hiring? Because Soto was a little iffy on it. I thought, okay, it was a safe choice, right? Yeah. Like it wasn't, you know, you weren't, you know, swinging for the fences with like a new hot, like young, like assistant coach that didn't have experience. Like he's got tons of experience, but he was also available for a reason, right? With the Chargers letting him go because their defense wasn't great this season. What do you make of that hire?
I like him. I think, you know, obviously when you go back to what happened in 2010 with the Seattle Seahawks and the guys that he had there, some of them weren't even first round picks talent wise that he was dealing with. He was dealing with some guys who were picked the third round, the fifth round. So he brought them up to be what they were. And that was one of the most formidable defenses of its time. So now you look at how he's going to have to build the Raiders, but there's a lot of building that needs to be done there. You have to start with the defensive line, work your way back to the secondary. The safeties are going to need some work, the interior of the defense. What do you do there? I mean, Corey Littleton, I think, started to come up towards the end, but it wasn't exactly what people were hoping for with the big contract and bringing him over from the Rams and what you saw there. And you're thinking he was going to be doing what he did with the Rams with the Raiders, and it wasn't there. And I think maybe, again, that applies to the whole Zoom offseason, learning a new defense, trying to apply it on the fly. But yeah, Gus Bradley, I mean, he doesn't have many defenses that fall under the 15th percentile, I mean, rank of the 32 teams. So he's always in the top echelon when you look over what he's done defensively with, as far as even if the Jaguars, when he was a head coach, his record might not have been great, but his defenses were still great. And that's where he started out with Yannick Ngakoue, who's just a monster now. So I think there's a lot of stuff you could commend Gus Bradley for that I want to see how he applies it to the Raiders.
Yeah, so you talked about him having good defenses. His first year with Seattle, they were 25, and they made that huge jump to 7. What do you think has to happen for this team? Not only to play better, but what do you think, who do you think are those key pieces that Mayock needs to really focus on to get into the top 10.
Well, Jonathan Abram, I'm going to start there because he's a wild card. He's great. His intensity, you love to see that. It's the kind of things that as a Raider fan that you want to see out of your defensive player, the spark that he has, the intensity that he has, and the dog that's in him, right? But you also want to see somebody who's disciplined enough to know where to stay in their gap, know where to cover, and how to adapt to a play if you see something that you should drop back in coverage to, or you should come up and play to the ball. And that's something where I think a lot of times you see him come up and play to the ball, and then he's leaving a gap, boom, big play down the field. And you know, I don't want to say it was Jonathan Abram in this one because I don't think it was, but like, you know, the Jerry Jeudy play, for instance, is a good example. At the end of the season, a 92-yard touchdown
Kelsey touchdown at the end of the game, that was him.
Jonathan Abram was such a weird like splash of cold water late season, because I was the same way. Like the one game he played last season, early this season, like, oh, I love his passion, look at those hits, like he plays so hard. And you look at the stats, you're like, oh, every quarterback that throws to him turns into Aaron Rodgers because he can't cover anybody. You're like, oh damn it, I was really excited about this guy, then you just look at him, he just can't cover anybody.
Yeah, that I think opposing quarterbacks had 109.2 passer rating against him when he was targeted this year. So that's not what you want to see.
It's like putting Soto in coverage.
I mean, come on. I would get, I'd keep him under 100. You know, honestly, that was my big task for Gus Bradley this year is to find that role for Abram. Make him that kind of a hybrid safety linebacker type guy where he doesn't have to – he's not tasked to be in coverage a lot. To see if he can figure something out. You know, coach, instead of doing the Gunther thing, well, this is my defense. We're not going to game plan for a specific opponent. We're going to have the whole playbook open and confuse the fuck out of everybody. Let's see if Bradley can, you know, coach the team he actually has.
Yeah, that's something I think salary cap wise, the Raiders are going to really have to pay attention to how they play that this year. You're owing a guy like LaMarcus Joyner upwards of $8 million to stay on. And there's probably going to be some restructuring that needs to be done with some of those big contracts to be able to keep who is there and to be able to work some room with some of the free agents that are out there. So yeah, that's going to be a big point of focus is how they manage the roster with the salary cap, because right now I believe they're over, so they're gonna have to get under to be able to sign some guys to bring on some new talent if that's what they're gonna be looking for in free agency as opposed to, you know, the draft, because the draft you could, you know, work a little bit easier I think with the room that you have. But when you start thinking about too, Malik Collins, he didn't pan out, but you know, maybe something happens with Richie Incognito because he went on IR. Maybe they, you know, either restructure with him or they cut him loose. That was a big contract. Another one was obviously Trent Brown. What do you do with 77? So $66 million man, does he stay on? You know, it's a lot of question marks, I think, that need to be dealt with as to how the Raiders work out the money in the room. But once you get past that, I think Gus Bradley could really start working with first the core. I think Kwiatkowski was good. I think that he was a big bright spot and carrying the green dot for the team and play calling, as well as Littleton, blah, blah, blah. Corey Littleton. I think that he is
easy for you to say.
Picking it up. Yeah, he was picking it up there towards the end. So when you look at the defensive ends too, you got two young talents in Salt and Pepper with Clem Farrell and also Max Crosby. But Max Crosby's another one like Abram that I think he just needs some refining and how he comes from the point of attack. He likes to go after the quarterback a lot, trying to get those sacks. So his numbers there are good. But when you drop him back into run coverage, not so good. So it's like, where is he going to be able to find the things that are simplified and the play calling to be able to be more efficient?
Very, very broad question. So I want you to answer it in any way you see fit.
Okay.
Where are you on Derek Carr?
Yeah, that is a broad question. It's one of those things. He's a not a crucial person, but when you talk about whether you love him or you hate him, people are on one side of the fence. They're not on the, he's all right.
It's so weird how such like a vanilla dude is so polarizing. People love him or hate. Like, we fight about that guy more on this show than anyone else.
Yeah, I think, you know, he blossomed not to the level I think that people wanted to see, but when you talk about the intricacies of the Gruden offense and all the different things that come along with it, I think that he came a long ways from what we saw in the first year with Gruden with him. So I think the Carr with, you know, over 4,000 yards this season and the amount of touchdowns that he had ratio wise compared to the interceptions, I think he's done pretty well there when you look at that, taking more chances downfield. But with a guy like Ruggs, who was hurt and then wasn't really, I think, picking up the play calling the way that you wanted to see him do it. And he, you know, such a fast weapon, you're thinking he's going to be the Tyreek Hill of the Raiders. But then all of a sudden, he's just kind of running these jet sweeps and not taking off with that speed. You saw it a couple times, but then he was either overthrown or underthrown, or they weren't connecting on the pattern. So there's things that I think if Ruggs can take a big leap, you might see Carr start to be more dynamic with the weapons that he has. But I think when you talk about a couple years back and, you know, he's thrown to random guys who nobody really knew all the names of, you know, like Seth Roberts, when it's like, okay, well, he's done pretty well for himself with the names that he had when he was supposed to have a guy like Antonio Brown. So, you know, it's a lot of adjusting that he's had to make. Tyrell Williams was supposed to be there this year, wasn't there, but Nelson Aguilar stepped up like big time. So I think that's another one they're going to need to restructure. But yeah, I mean, Where am I on Derek Carr? I think right now is probably the best bet that the Raiders have as far as the two quarterbacks, but I did want to see more of Mariota. I can't lie there. I wanted to see in the last game, Mariota get some reps and play the whole game, to be honest. I mean, Carr was playing with the messed up groin at the time. I wanted to see what they had in Mariota, because if they're not going to really, you know, just keep him, if the intention is maybe, hey, let's shop him, see what we can get, why not see what you have out of him? But yeah, I was wondering how come they didn't play him in that last game. I thought it might have been a better way to go. Plus, he'd get more comfortable. He came out of the injury, all the stuff with him. So I wanted to see Mariota. I did, but we didn't see him there. So I just wanted to see, what do they really have in this guy? Because a lot of talk coming into the season was, is Mariota going to take Carr's job? You know, yeah. and I just wanted to see where he was after getting his health back, because he looked pretty good in the one game where he came in.
At least up his draft trade value, right? Like, who's going to take who's going to take a $10 million backup quarterback? Like, you had to make
We talked about it here at length before the last game. What should the Raiders do? And I think all of us were talking about, I think RJ wanted a.
I wanted Mariota for the trade value. I wanted him to start the last game.
Yeah, Rory wanted Carr to play the game. I think RJ and I were on the same boat, which is why Rory isn't here. I think we kicked him out because he's an idiot.
Hit the three-strike rule in like 2 weeks.
Like, we're done with you, bro. You're done. We love the British accent, but you got to go.
Oh, man.
What do you want to see from Carr next year? What's the thing that you didn't see that you want to see coming into 2021?
I think there's times when he plays it safe when he shouldn't be playing it safe. Or times like, you know, this goes back 2 years, not last season, but when you see him throw it away on fourth down instead of trying to make a play. And there's times where he does things like, you know what, I got nobody, I'm going to take off and run with the ball. But, you know, there, I think, are times where he's looking down his first read so long that maybe his third read or his fourth read, if there is one, isn't available by the time. I think adjusting quicker to his reads is one thing. Although I think if you look it up on Pro Football Focus, I remember studying this a little bit back, that he's one of the quickest quarterbacks when it comes to getting rid of the football. But to me, it seems like even though he's getting rid of it quickly, that he's staring down his first read a while longer than he is with the other reads. So as far as shifting, if the coverage is busted up on one of the plays. So I want to see him try to read quicker down the field. I want to see him extend the field longer. I mean, you started to see that a little bit more, but, you know, I know with the Alex Smith, for instance, a lot of people used to call him Captain Checkdown, you know, and I don't say that Derek Carr is
Charlie.
Yeah. He's not Captain Checkdown, but he does throw under a lot, and there's a lot of the quick passes. And yes, some of that has to do with being in the West Coast offense, but I think a lot of it too is that that's where the security is for him. Darren Waller, obviously, you know, throwing to him 10 times a game is something that we've seen a lot. So I want to see him go use his wide receivers more. I want to see that, not to take anything away from Darren Waller, because he's fantastic at what he does. He's one of the bar none best players on that team. But when you start thinking about, what if you start spreading it out and open up bigger things for Darren Waller, I think that's where I want to see him go next year. And more open down the field type passes, use that speed of Ruggs if Ruggs can get up on the playbook.
This is a kind of a tough question, and especially hard during the COVID era, because you're not, you know, in the facility and, like, you know, with players all the time, with execs all the time, because of, you know, the situation that we're in. But I mean, when you look at, like, you know, I've been a Raider fan my whole life, and they've been terrible since I was a teenager, right? So it's like, we talk about all these, like, little things we want to change. Oh, Derek Carr needs to make this adjustment. We need to pick up this player. There is a foundational franchise problem when you're only been in the playoffs once in the last almost 20 years, right? Like, this is beyond just, like, little changes. Now that they're in Vegas and you're in Vegas, and even though it's been a, you know, COVID time, you don't quite have your finger as close to the pulse as you want to. Does the franchise feel like there's something lagging there? Does it feel like something's missing? Does it feel like it's a franchise where something's off and that's why they've been this bad for so long? Is there anything you can put your finger on in that sense?
Well, I think when they, excuse me, made the changes with Reggie McKenzie to Mike Mayock, that was one of the things that was a point of focus for them, was they wanted to get better in the draft and bring players in who were going to really make a difference for this team. They wanted fresh young blood on that team. Mm-hmm. So as far as the past 3 years go, I mean, you could look back and start thinking about the teams that Reggie McKenzie was looking to build versus the teams now that Mike Mayock is trying to build. I think they wanted to basically blow up the roster, and you can see that. It's obvious. So yeah. I think that's but as far as I think some of the recent draft picks, I think a lot of people obviously like they questioned Arnett when he was drafted at the spot he was drafted at. And they're like, ding, ding. I don't think that was, yeah, I don't think that was what anyone was thinking there. I don't think that anybody, you know, was thinking about Henry Ruggs as the first wide receiver off the board. So
ding, ding. Yeah. Cleveland Farrell at four. Yeah. I liked him at 12, at 15, but not at four.
Yeah. I thought for sure it would be, I mean, Jerry Jeudy had everything on paper that you wanted to see, but I liked the intangibles that CeeDee Lamb brought to the table. That was one of the big things I was harping on in all the podcasts before the draft, is like just the way that he can go up for a catch. You know, he has all the things that you don't see on paper that I think a wide receiver can make himself great with. And that was something I really liked CeeDee Lamb for. But yeah, Ruggs obviously had the speed, but when you look at that Alabama team, it was Jerry Jeudy leading the charge. So I was a little bit, huh? Like stumped with that. So I think these are things like, I think they thought, you know, they were seeing something else that was going to work well with their schemes, with their team. Obviously they're looking a lot for character. People who can really stand up and be leaders on the team. Like look at Abram and who he is, you know, look at Josh Jacobs, who he is, Cleveland Farrell, all those guys were leaders within their own right. And Hunter Renfro is another one. He's so like, I guess underdog kind of like, you never think he's going to do what he does, but the guy's so scrappy. And yeah, I use the word scrappy and they say, oh, you know, wide receiver, you said scrappy, but yeah, he is. I can't think of another way to define it. He gets into situations where you think, oh my God, he's in double coverage. This guy's going to come up with the ball and end up with his back broken. But no, he is just smooth, like water flows through, just like Bruce Lee of the NFL. And you don't know how he does it.
Bruce Lee of the NFL.
There we go. Third and Renfro's done. That nickname's done. It's Bruce Lee of the NFL.
He also had another nickname that Rory gave him, was Hummer Renfro.
Need reference points for this?
He just said it.
His nickname in college. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, no, I hadn't heard that one yet, but yeah. Well,
great. You probably never hear it again.
Yeah, hopefully it dies. It dies with this show. We never hear it again. Now that the Raiders have had their first full season in Vegas, and again, it was a COVID season, no fans, weird. How has the city embraced the team? Like I know with the Golden Knights, like they came in and they, bam, they're in the Stanley Cup playoffs, like, you know, season one. And so everyone's like, oh, we love the winner. Like they're great. This is wonderful. How have the fans in Vegas taken to the Raiders with this kind of topsy-turvy first season?
Yeah, at first, I think everybody was all in on it. And I think they thought they were going to get the chance to see this new pristine stadium, but nobody's getting in. So there were a couple games where there were just swarms of people outside of Allegiant, like trying to tailgate, trying to set up. But, you know, Metro shut that down real quick. They're like, nope, you can't be out here, guys. You can't gather like this. And then next thing you see at the next game, there are barricades around so that people can't follow the bus in. So I think a lot of the things that people look forward to doing, like waving the team in when they come in on the bus, or watching, you know, the flags wave up and down by other fans, and setting up tents somewhere, because, you know, if you ever went to a game in Oakland, which I know you have, RJ, I'm pretty sure you have too, that's like the cornerstone of what everybody built their camaraderies around. The fans, they always were out there tailgating. I don't care if you showed up at 5 a.m., at 7 a.m., at 1 p.m. I don't care if the game time was at 10 a.m. There were always people in that parking lot, and they were always ready to be part of Raider Nation and to show their colors and to be just doing, you know, what they do with carne asada and Corona was my experience. But, you know, it's like, I don't know.
It's a staple.
It is.
If I could taste it, I'd be so happy right now.
Oh, and the elote on the corner. Don't get me started. But yeah, right under the BART station.
Yep.
So yeah, you know, and because I think you can't build that here in that stadium. You can't have that right now because of the pandemic. It's made it a really difficult thing for a lot of people to get excited about, because there were supposed to be all these watch parties, a lot of them got broken up. I know Stage Door Casino was one place that was trying to hold it down for a while, but I spoke with Violator and he had told me like the venue's a little small for Vader Nation. So it's like there's all these little things that people are still trying to find their footing with, even the hardcore Vader Nation that come out. There's like one guy, Darkside Demon, he is out there every game. I don't know his real name. I know he's Darkside Demon. That guy came up, drove up, he said 3 hours every game just to walk around and be out there to represent. But like, other than that, I didn't see many people.
Because he's a Raider fan, I assume his mom named him Darkside Demon. Like that's his Christian name.
Yeah. That's on the ID. Right?
Yeah. When the fans do come in there, I'm very curious how this is going to happen because like I want to assume like home field advantage is going to be silver and black wall to wall. It's going to be awesome. Like all these new fans, like fans from LA, fans from the Bay Area. But then I think about it, I'm like, wait, this is Vegas. Are the casinos going to buy up like all the tickets and just give them all the high rollers and it's going to be all just like random rich people? Or are we going to get just like, are we going to get like a legit full crowd of like silver and black diehards?
Yeah, don't make me sad by saying up that scenario, man. Like
I'm Mr. Rainy Cloud. I'm sorry.
No, but I could see that happening. I could see that being a scenario where the city of Las Vegas and some of the Raider, you know, brass is like, hey, let's get these people out here. Or, you know, and MGM support's been tremendous. Let's get some of those employees out here. And, you know, like the Super Bowl, it's all the vaccinated workers right now that are getting the opportunity to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those are the people on the front lines. I'm fine with that. But I'm saying like in the coming 2021 season, is that the kind of crowd that we might see at the games until the entire public is vaccinated? And that's going to be something that we don't even know how that process is rolling out. You hear all the confusion along all every other state from state to state. So it's hard to say what kind of crowd, you know, might be out there, but you know, I could see that happening where it's a situation where, okay, yeah, we told the Golden Knights that, you know, the team could get in here because they're going to light the torch, or, you know, the mayor and her people. So then they do have these great luxury suites. They have a Twitch lounge in there that I think they could fill seats with all of that if everyone is vaccinated by that point. Mm-hmm. But, or even just the, you know, COVID is gone. I mean, give, I don't know what everyone's going to do because a lot of people are like, vaccination under 2 years. I don't know if I'm ready to try that. But, you know, putting all that aside, it's one of those things where you have to just kind of plan it out. But yeah, I could see that happening with the high rollers and the big wigs and suites, you know, getting comped to certain people that have gone out and gambled $1 million at the, you know, Palazzo or whatever. I'm just throwing names out. Nothing particular about that place. But yeah, I would hope that you get to see some of the
Palazzo,
fans. Yeah, I'd hope you get to see some of the fans that you want to out there, but it's hard to say. It really is. You know, how much is it going to cost a ticket? 500, 1,000, you know, we don't know yet what the average ticket's going to cost. So I know some of the people had the PSLs and those are all, you know, spoken for. So yeah, I know a lot of people that were tweeting me during the season, like, hey, I'm in section 124. Can you take a picture for me and show me what that section looks like?
Can you just watch the whole game and videotape it? And just so I can just watch it from that seat.
Right, yeah, just to get a look at what I'd be doing. I'd lose my credential for it, but you know, as long
as it's you'd be a credentialed Raider OG for the rest of your life. Like to give up your credential to give someone the experience of a lifetime. You can't put a price on that, Heidi. He's like, yeah, I can. It's called my salary. Yeah,
but I get a statue in East San Jose. That's where I'm from. So
I will build one.
I might consider it for a statue.
We'll work that.
Make it work. All right, her name's Heidi Fang. Catch all of her great work at the Review Journal. You can catch her on Twitter as well, at Heidi Fang, also covering MMA, which is how we go way back, almost 10 years. We're getting old, Heidi. We're getting old. Thanks for coming on. This was great. Great catching up with you.
I'm so glad to see Heidi. You. Juan, nice to meet you. Nice meeting you, Heidi. Man. Get better.
I'm a tough cookie.
All right, fight the power.
He's been bitching about it the whole time.
I have. I'm such a bitch. I'm such
working
a bitch
sympathy
sick.
Points the whole time. Oh, I have the flu. I have COVID. Listen to me cry.
Well, he's smiling right now. Here, look at this guy smiling.
Put on a brave face.
I give you A+. You did a great job.
Working.
All right, welcome back. Thank you so much, Heidi. That was fantastic. She knows her shit, man. Cranking out. Quarterback ratings against Jonathan Abram out of the blue.
Like, made me feel stupid.
I know. I got like 7 monitors in front of me and I didn't have it there for me.
She pulled that shit out like this. Here it is, right here. Yeah. I have it.
That's why she gets paid the big bucks. That's why we're doing podcasts. All right, before we get out of here, we got one more thing we got to do.
We know you know all about Gruden's grinders.
Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, special teams players, backups.
But what do you know about Rory's grinders?
I think he's a great dude. I think he's got all the talent in the world.
You can't find me, I'll be the closest one on Grinder.
You know what? Every time I hear that, it just makes me miss Rory less and less.
Right? It's like we start to miss him, and then you hear his voice, and you're like, "Yeah, I'm glad he's gone."
Kinda. I mean, the fuck.
With friends like us, who needs enemies, Soto? You know.
Perfect. Exactly. But something happens to me, I'll get replaced in a second. It'll be Heidi, you and Heidi killing it. No problem. All right. So grind my Rory's / Soto's grinder for this episode is the one, the only, Jason Witten. Jason Witten, the tight end, longtime Cowboy, short-time Raider, is retiring after 17 seasons. Mm-hmm. And I am not making him the grinder because of his illustrious career. I'm making him the grinder because he's going to finally stop taking snaps away from Foster Moreau.
Aw, he's a nice guy. He's good dude.
Yeah. So grab that clipboard and teach these guys what you should have been teaching them instead of taking their snaps away, Mr. Witten.
You know, I got to respect the dude. Like, at 37 years old, he managed to get $4 million from a team that already had two amazing tight ends.
It just doesn't make sense, man.
How did he do it? That's amazing.
It didn't make sense to me, man. It really didn't.
I want to hire him as my agent. I don't even need an agent, but I think if I had Jason Witten as my agent, I'd be a millionaire.
I'm not good enough at anything to have an agent at anything. So, I mean, I kind of want him as my agent just so I can be just deemed as good at something.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him getting that. Man. Yeah, it was frustrating because, like, not only because, you know, normally it's like, all right, you get someone on the team, like, well, you know, maybe we're overpaying him, but at least he's contributing. At least he's adding. No, he hurt us because he took away Foster Moreau snaps. And you're just like, damn it. Like, I want to like Jason Witten. He's not a bad guy. You know, I'm sure he was a good example for everybody. You know, a little veteran leadership, more veteran leadership. But I'd rather have those snaps to Foster and that $4 million. Thank you very much.
Yeah, man. Like we said, Foster Moreau, his rookie season, he had 5 red zone touchdowns, man. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good for a rookie.
The best thing that he did, though, is he broke a Chiefs record. He broke Tony Gonzalez's career records. So,
you know, I played against Tony Gonzalez in high school.
Really? You're that? Yeah. I forgot how old you are. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm old, dude. I'm 43.
He played for my rival high school. I went to Marina High School in Huntington Beach. He went to Huntington High School in Huntington Beach. Yeah. But he's older than me by a couple of years.
Yeah, a few years. He was older than me. He was a senior when I was a sophomore. Mm-hmm. And we didn't play him in a game. We played him in like a passing league thing. And that dude was a fucking man then.
You can move.
Huh? He was like 17 and he was wearing a t-shirt, looked like he was wearing pads. There's only two people that I've seen up close that I was in awe of. He was one.
And me.
And no. Oh, okay. William McGinnis. I went and see that same year, actually. William
Beach Pauly.
Yeah. Willie McGinnis was at SC already.
Okay.
And he shook my hand, and I don't have tiny hands, but his hand went like halfway up my forearm when he shook my hand. And he had like a 28 inch waist, fucking 60 inch shoulders. He was huge, man. He was, I'm like, this guy's going to be a top 5 pick. And he was.
Imagine Tony Gonzalez and Cherokee Parks on the same high school basketball court. That's what they had at Huntington High School at one point. Those are some studs out there.
Yeah, people don't remember that Tony Gonzalez played basketball at Cal too. Yeah. He played both. He played basketball and football at Cal.
Well, one thing he couldn't do, and that's hold the all-time record for tight ends. A Raider beat it. There we go. That made it all worthwhile having Jason Witten on here.
Go Raiders.
All right, next week we'll have another great guest for you. We'll talk about the Super Bowl. We'll see what's going on in free agency. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me. All right, thanks for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We love that you do. Big thank you to Heidi Fang from Las Vegas Review Journal for joining us as well. And a giant podcast high five for subscribing, rating, and commenting on whatever platform you're on. And go ahead and give us a follow on all the social medias as well. Until next time, later.